They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
Say Yen. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Today's the day a colorful new $5 bill is being released into circulation. Too bad it's not worth as much as it used to be. How far is the dollar going to plunge? Today, it reached record lows in trading against the euro and the Swiss franc. And then there's the yen. For the first time in a dozen years, it cost less than 100 yen to buy a dollar. It wound up bouncing back to slightly above 100, but not before Japan's stock market took a hit. The Nikkei tumbled over 3% today to its lowest rate in 2.5 years. On Wall Street Wednesday, the Dow closed down 47 points to 12,110. The Nasdaq closed down 12 to 2243, and the S&P closed down 12 to 1307. Some countries in the Middle East aren't so keen on our green. Marketplace's Jill Barshay says some are rethinking their ties to it.
Kuwait was the first Gulf state to stop pegging its currency to the dollar last May. The United Arab Emirates is thinking about it. So is Qatar. Paul Lennox of Custom House Currency Exchange tracks foreign currencies. He says the weak U.S. dollar is causing problems for the Gulf states. Inflation's running at 13% a year in Qatar.
As the U.S. dollar falls, then the Gulf currencies also fall relative to the euro. And so if the Gulf states are importing goods, services, what have you, from Europe, the price of those imports are going up in their currency.
Of course, the most important commodity in the region is oil, and it's priced in dollars. Lennox says that's why Saudi Arabia and the bigger Gulf states are likely to keep their currencies married to the dollar. They're making a lot more in oil revenues than they're losing in inflation, he says. I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
New figures show 60% more homes are facing foreclosure. Nevada, California, and Florida have the dubious distinction of the highest foreclosure rates. To avoid another mess like this in the future, today in Washington, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is expected to recommend a revamp of rules on home lending. One of the recommendations includes nationwide licensing standards for mortgage brokers. Marketplace's Sam Eaton says also today in Washington, a coalition of community organizations will be in the nation's capital to ask for help.
The National Community Reinvestment Coalition wants the federal government to buy up troubled mortgages from banks at a discounted rate, taking some of the pressure off of strapped homeowners. But the group's president, John Taylor, says it's not a bailout.
It's really acting more as a cash advance agent to recoup these loans from Wall Street, so that they can be modified and restructured.
Taylor says once restructured, the loans can be sold back to the banks, keeping the government in the black. But mortgage industry economist Tom LaMalfa says that's wishful thinking in a time of sinking home values.
The bottom line is that the government is going to be on the hook for billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, given the magnitude of the potential problem.
LaMalfa says even if the government buys up mortgages at discounted rates, those discounts could become deficits if the mortgage crisis worsens, leaving the government holding the tab. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
You are listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, March 13th on marketplace.org. As if we didn't have enough problems, now the troubled mortgage bond fund of the prestigious Carlyle Group is near collapse. As Stephen Beard reports, it may be a sign the Fed's plan to stabilize the credit markets isn't working.
Carlyle Capital has been struggling for weeks, but now it's reached the end of the road. The banks lent it more than $21 billion and they want their money back. They're about to grab all of the fund's remaining assets. These are, you guessed it, mortgage-backed securities. Carlyle's troubles reflect a wider and worrying situation. Its assets are backed by AAA-rated residential mortgages. We're not talking subprime here. The fear is that billions of dollars of good quality securities could flood the market, further depressing their value and further reducing the amount that banks will lend. The Fed made a dramatic $200 billion move on Tuesday to stop banks foreclosing on these kinds of assets. In Carlyle's case, it clearly hasn't worked. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Later this morning, we'll get the numbers on February retail sales. Predictions are for anemic growth at best. If there's any increase, it's likely to reflect higher energy prices. At the risk of sounding too negative, Ashley Milntite reports on a few possible bright spots.
People have to eat, even if many staples are getting pricier, so supermarkets should weather a downturn pretty well. But Brian Bethune, an economist with Global Insight, says certain stores get fatter than others during lean times.
So we're seeing, for instance, more shopping in Sam's Club and Costco types of options where people are trying to get more discounts or they're buying in bulk as opposed to smaller quantities.
He says prescription drug sales are also immune to bad times.
People, when they need some health care, that's an issue that's not related to the economy.
But Scott Hoyt of Moody's Economy.com isn't so sure drug makers will escape unscathed.
Some people are going to lose their health insurance because they lose their job. And if the pharmaceutical is at all discretionary, it's going to make them less likely to buy it.
Hoyt says no area of retail is entirely recession-proof. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
We talk a lot on this program about environmentally friendly products. Maybe you are already thinking green. But have you thought about green arrangements for the sweet hereafter? A British company is building a business on the biodegradable casket. April Dembosky reports.
Max Bruderle is a 65-year-old retired economist living in Houston. He's not expecting to kick the bucket anytime soon, but when he does, he's planning to be buried in something called an ecopod. The eco part of the name comes from its composition, 100% recycled paper. And the pod part, well, it looks like a giant seed pod.
The thing I like about the ecopod is it is aesthetically very pleasing. Even if it's made of paper, it still has to look like you are giving the deceased the last respect.
But this kind of respect doesn't come cheap. Ecopods cost more than $3,000, the average price of a conventional casket. And that's given some green burial advocates a case of sticker shock.
One thing that concerns me is the possibility that the green burial movement will become boutiqued.
Josh Slocum is executive director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance.
Green burial is not about what you buy. It's about what you don't buy. It's about simplicity and economy as much as it is about being environmentally friendly.
Some even question the green credentials of shipping a casket called an ecopod 5,200 miles from the UK. Mark Harris wrote the book Grave Matters.
Is a burial really green when you've got to transport these vehicles thousands and thousands of carbon-spewing miles?
But fans of biodegradable caskets hope growing demand will spur U.S. craftspeople to begin making them locally. Cynthia Beale is Ecopod's sole importer in the U.S.
My hope is that after I've had these in circulation for a while, we'll see artists from around the country deciding that they could make something like that and do it here.
But for now, the debate is mostly academic. Strict zoning laws and some reluctance in the funeral industry to embrace green burials have limited them to just a handful of cemeteries in the U.S. I'm April Dembosky for Marketplace.
Here's how high the price of food is becoming. Even the companies that make it are feeling the pinch. The nation's largest chicken supplier is closing half its distribution centers. Pilgrim's Pride will also shut down a processing complex. The company says it's cost $1 billion more to feed its chickens over the past 2 years. Meanwhile, the rising price of food is leading to boom times for the world's largest food company. Nestle is raising its sales forecast. Lots of Kit Kats and Nescafe. Tomorrow, the EPA is expected to announce new rules requiring cleaner engines on ships and trains. Since the year 2000, the nation's five big freight rail carriers have spent $10 billion on new tracks, rail yards, and equipment. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports these are boom times in the railroad industry.
U.S. railroads still carry coal and timber for manufacturing, but increasingly they're moving containers full of Chinese-made consumer goods from ports to cities. America's appetite for imports just keeps growing, and rail carriers want a bigger piece of that business.
As that grows, you cannot put it all on the highways.
Bob Gramila is with Union Pacific. He and other rail execs say their trains can carry some of the consumer goods that trucks now move and do it greener.
Freight rail is about 3 times more fuel efficient and therefore more environmentally friendly than trucks on a ton-mile basis.
Rail companies have been pushing that line in their expansion efforts. CSX Railroad even worked up a carbon calculator on its website so shippers could see emission savings from rail. And Maine's governor is pushing trains as a greener transport alternative that can cut highway maintenance costs. But rail's green PR sticks in the craw of some of the industry's critics. Barry Wallerstein, a Southern California air quality regulator, has sued the rail companies over their diesel emissions. He says they contribute to the region's smog.
They're not a cleaner choice until they have cleaner technology fully utilized, including on their locomotives. And frankly, they have had their head in the sand about air pollution cleanup for decades.
Tim Lynch at the American Trucking Association says greener or not, in the end, he doesn't believe trains pose a serious threat to the long-haul trucker.
And because the railroad is a fixed line that begins at one point and ends at one point. Once it gets off of that, it has to be in a truck.
Barry Wallerstein says trucks are adopting cleaner technology faster than trains. One reason is federal laws have historically shielded rail from serious regulation. Environmentalists are hailing the EPA's decision due tomorrow to demand cleaner train engines, but fear the feds will wait a full decade to put the requirements in place. In Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy your day. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.